Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Today we decipher signals from the Fed's latest monthly meeting. Also, trading app Robinhood is going live. They start trading today in the evening. What do you need to know as an investor? Also, that rout in Chinese shares in the crosshairs of Beijing's regulatory crackdown. Who is hurting from the outflows of capital into the Chinese stock market? All that coming up in this edition of Money and Me. First, it's time to say good morning to Arun Pai. He's Chief Strategy Officer at Flow. Good morning, Arun. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Michelle. Good morning to you, too.
Let's take a look at the U.S. Federal Reserve. It's concluded its monthly meeting. No change yet in interest rates or its bond purchasing program. No surprises on that front. But Fed Chair Jerome Powell did give some indications about tightening credit and his views on the economy. What did you read from the Fed's latest policy decision, Arun?
It's amazing, right? It's like a 101 in English all over again. You got to see progress versus substantial further progress. No, like all these phrases and stuff, I think you're spot on in terms of, you know, overall the messaging is basically exactly the same, mm-hmm. where he came out saying progress has been seen, mm-hmm. But we're not seeing substantial further progress just yet, giving an indication to the market that this year is pretty much going to be status quo, definitely will be. Next year, most probably exactly the same. Towards the end of next year is when he believes that, you know, interest rates can potentially start increasing. And so we saw a little tick up in terms of the probability that the market predicts of when the interest rates will rise. In 2022, it went from like 52% closer to 60%, just because of the word where Jerome Powell came out saying progress has been seen. But I think nothing much changed over there. I think the cues that the market was trying to look at mm-hmm. is when the tapering of bond purchases is going to happen, right? Where on a monthly basis, to give some idea, $80 billion of treasuries, $40 billion of mortgage-backed security bonds are being purchased by the Fed. So, you know, the continuous expansion of the Fed balance sheet, when will that start tapering? And I think especially given how high house prices had gone, more and more market participants were wondering whether the Fed's going to start at least begin by tapering the mortgage bond backed securities part. He came out very clearly saying that's not going to happen right now. So, you know, that kind of like assuaged the market fears of whether the Fed might be looking to tighten and take away the punch bowl too quickly. A couple of other interesting things that at least I took away from the statement was the Fed coming out saying that the economy is handling its successive COVID wave a lot better. And I think that's something very important because, I mean, even in Singapore, right, we've seen like a wave after wave. It doesn't seem like at least for the next 6 months to a year, this COVID saga is going to end. But what's very reassuring is that in the world's largest economy, it seems a lot more resilient to every subsequent wave, given the increase in vaccination rates. So, you know, even if there's a lockdown in, say, Florida or Georgia or California, at least, you know, rest be assured, it seems like the numbers that the Fed is looking at are on solid footing. So that's very positive, reassuring news to the investors, I feel.
All right. So Powell reiterating that T word, transitory. He believes recent price increases are transitory. Says that doesn't mean prices will go back down, simply that he does not expect them to continue rising at the current rate for an extended period of time. Let's pivot now to a hot IPO. And I'm talking about the Robinhood IPO that does go live this evening. Now, for a change, Robinhood will be looking to retail investors, allowing more of them to buy up its stock versus going to institutional investors first. Do you think this is, how do you think this is going to impact its IPO?
So, you know, typically in IPOs, roughly between 10 to 20% of the amount of shares that the company is looking to sell is set aside for retail. In this case, I mean, in a way, hats off to Robin Hood for eating their own cooking.
Yep.
And they've made that percentage increase to like 35%. In addition, typical institutional lockup period for an IPO, the ones at least that are the lead underwriters, typically is 180 days. In this case, it's been reduced to 125 days. All with the aspect, I presume, of Robinhood trying to say, you know, we are a retail platform. We want to try and provide more power to the retail investors. So from that aspect, you know, it's good. I mean, kind of understandable as to where they're going, what the marketing message is, etc. It makes a lot of sense. From the perspective of valuation itself, the numbers are quite mind-boggling, right? Because you have a company that's looking to IPO at over $30 billion. Interactive Brokers, which is one of my favorite stocks, currently valued at $26 billion. And in terms of any metrics that you want to take a look at, you know, Interactive Brokers is far, far ahead of this. But it always, you know, the market's trying to figure out what's going to be the future growth aspect for the company. And in that, at least when this whole retail trading frenzy is going on, perfect timing for an IPO from the company perspective.
Yep.
From the investor perspective, a little bit more of a question mark. But I think, you know, the one, and reading all these headlines, I can see why there's so much anguish in retail investors' heads. Like just looking at the top headlines, right? Institutional investors coming out saying, I don't know what this even means, like 35% for retail, there's going to be a lot of volatility. Retail investors don't know what they're doing. It's all about memes. It's all about all this frenzy. But let's not, you know, taking a step back and we look at other more traditional IPO'd companies, we've seen a lot of fluctuation over there also, right? Like Facebook went down to like $25 right after IPO. And these are the same institutional investors that claim that they could value these businesses a lot better than retail. So it kind of goes into, you know, an insight into why there's so much hatred in a way for Wall Street that thinks that they know how to do valuations a lot better than retail. I'm not taking any sides over here, but it was just interesting to read these, you know, these headlines of as to why institutional investors versus retail, why this whole friction is getting created in the first place.
Yeah, I'll be. I mean, a lot of recent IPOs have lagged behind broader market gains. But in the, on this move in particular, Robinhood going public, it starts trading on the NASDAQ exchange today with the bulk of sales, if you've just joined us, going to retail investors as opposed to institutional buyers and the small guy getting a tiny sliver. So it's shaking things up. You touched on volatility. You know, the move seems democratic, but not without risks, particularly if the retail traders do flip shares on day one to cash in their profits. So what do you think? Is it shaking up the industry, Robinhood, or is this going to backfire?
Interesting question. I think from the perspective of, you know, as I was saying, like from raising capital, Robinhood, huge checkmark, right? Like they timed this to perfection and life is great. From the perspective of investors slash traders, I guess, it's become so easy, right? Like you literally just need to open up the app, click that I am interested, and suddenly, you know, you can get an allocation of pre-IPO shares, something that was next to impossible, or it basically is impossible for a retail investor. And it's only for the really ultra high net worth going through their private banks and getting in through the back door. That being said, though, given the 35% is to retail, it really depends on how market sentiment evolves in a very short-term period, right? Because you could have, you know, the Portnoys of the world suddenly coming out saying, we're going to take Robinhood to like over $100 today.
Right.
Let's pump this thing up. And you're sitting on like 3x returns in one day, which is fantastic. But at the same time, you could have a whole bunch of people or some whales in the retail space trying to push this thing down through these same meme stocks, right? So volatility, it can be your friend if you are a very, very savvy trader. From an investor perspective, if you're looking to buy into this, and not to say who's right or wrong, right? This company could be worth $100 billion next year, but one really needs to take a step back and see what are the metrics that you're looking at that the company needs to realize to be able to get to that metric? So don't think of a company's valuation just as simple as something like number of shares outstanding times the share price, right? It's really important for investors to think about what are the metrics that one needs to believe in to ensure that the company actually gets to a certain valuation. It could be number of investors. I mean, forget even the traditional quote-unquote metrics of free cash flow or net income or anything like that, right? You're probably living in a different world right now. But just in terms of number of investors coming on the platform, assets under management or assets under trading on this platform, there has to be some metric that the company needs to keep living up to for you to believe that this company can get to that $100 billion valuation or something. And I think that's something that people need to be a lot more careful about, rather than just thinking, I'll just buy this random stock at $33 or $35, thinking that someone else will bid this thing up to get to 50, right? I mean, that's something that this greed aspect really has to go away. And that's something that I'm actually not a big fan of, the Robin Hood model, where while I do agree with the concept that, you know, institutional investors know best, leave finance to people who are these larger players and keep it in the black box, let them make their money. Let's keep status quo of the financial industry the way it's been for the past 100 years. I think fintech startups have definitely disrupted that. But from the on the other hand, this aspect of gamifying investing, I think, is something that's not very productive either. So it's very important. And I would love to see Robinhood coming out with more educational aspects of investing, you know, coming up with more tutorials, coming up with more, like, truly trying to help the retail investor make money, because stock market is one of the best ways to ensure that you're not caught out by inflation, right? Because your savings accounts are giving you 0%. But I would, but overall, I would love to see Robinhood coming out with more initiatives like this, and they have started. So kudos to them for that.
Oh, well said. Gem of insights there for the investor. I just have to say, though, that we talk about democratizing finance or democratizing investing. Like real democracies, it's messy, right? You got to take the good with the bad. So if you're looking at Robinhood, it is one of the most highly anticipated initial public offerings of the year. It's going to trade on NASDAQ tonight under the ticker HOOD. Price at an expected $38 to $42 per share. Robinhood looking to sell some 55 million shares at that range to raise as much as $2.3 billion. All right, let's pivot quickly to, you know what? We can't stop talking about it here on our show. China. So this latest is that its securities regulator convened a virtual meeting with executives of major investment banks, attempting to ease fears about Beijing's crackdown on the private education industry. Now, how significant is this that authorities recognize how uncomfortable the markets have been with the crackdown on edtech and tech in general? We talked to a commentator earlier on, and he had some terrific insight on who is actually hurting. You know, because there's been a lot of debate. Is this about China trying to rein in inequality because the major investors are high net worth overseas investors? Or is this hurting the little guy, the investor from domestic China? What is your take on China's attempts to restore calm? How significant has the sell-off been?
I think, you know, this is something that investors into China or emerging markets to some extent have to be comfortable with, right? Because there is going to be more government intervention, for better or worse. That's part and parcel of the investing game into these emerging markets areas. Personally speaking, I think what China has done, maybe not necessarily in the edtech space that much, but overall, right, like from a holistic point of view, them trying to clamp down on these monopolies that have been created, I actually think is very good for their economy in the long run. Now, maybe this is a bit of a contrarian view, but if the exact same thing had happened due to an anti-monopoly ruling in the West, all the media networks would have come out saying, oh, this is fantastic. This is, you know, a developed market that's doing the right thing. Facebook, Google, Amazon of the world, they need to be try to be controlled. And it's true, right? I mean, just recently this week, all the earnings of tech giants have come out, and just Apple, Microsoft, Google have reported earnings of over $50 billion just last quarter, which is huge, right? Like is this a monopoly? I would dare say to a very large extent, absolutely. So is it right for the governments to come in and potentially try and figure out a way to control this? Mm-hmm. Yes. Has the West been able to figure this out? No. China is going to do what China has always does, right? It's centrally controlled, and they will try to figure out a way to ensure that these kinds of monopolistic ecosystem type companies, they have to open up their closed ecosystem, which I think is a very good thing. The EdTech thing specifically, pros and cons, right? As a value investor, mm-hmm. the EdTech space is something as good as it gets. You know, you have these huge tailwinds in terms of, you know, these news, these headlines where obviously parents are going to spend a lot more money on education of their children, Asia education, the teams are great. Mm. Valuations were probably on the higher side, but not insanely so as other tech companies. So from all aspects, this was a great sector to be involved in. And that's taken a massive beating, right? Like, I mean, China has literally just come down saying enough is enough. We've seen share prices drop by 60-70% in the EdTech space. Huge, right? Like that's what happened. So from the EdTech space specifically, is it good or bad overall for society? Tough to say. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, you know, the Asian education system, which has become so much more of, you know, school from morning till afternoon, then tutorial classes from afternoon to late night. Is it healthy? Probably not.
Yeah.
Is that where the Chinese government got involved? I don't know. But I think from the aspect of the investors, with the short-term volatility, keeping aside EdTech, more in the general tech space, I think obviously there's been a huge beating. Are there companies within this space that are actually providing a good service, a good product to people? Even if you open up their digital ecosystems to some extent, these companies will still be doing really well. And I think it's to the investor to take advantage of this volatility and slowly start scaling into some of these companies, or at least I definitely am.
Specifically on the sell-off, Bloomberg is saying that because China's key stock indexes have reached the brink of a bear market on the back of this news, even traders who usually buy the dip are staying away this time. But we spoke to a guest this morning who said he sees this as a once-in-a-lifetime buying opportunity. What do you think?
I don't know about the once-in-a-lifetime buying opportunity part because, you know, at the end of the day, these shares are not at absolute bedrock valuations just yet, right? I mean, if you look back 2008 March, give or take, 2009 March, give or take, was the once-in-a-lifetime buying opportunity where you had so many companies that were trading at one time their price to earnings, wow. And you had insiders just, you know, scooping up as many shares as possible in a whole host of companies, obviously. In this case, I think overall, I love the way, you know, China has grown, what they've done to the ecosystem, the number of billionaires it's creating. I mean, who calls it communist, right? It's producing more billionaires per day than even the US. From that regard, I think what's happening in China is fantastic. There's huge potential growth over there. Taking advantage of these lower valuations of a lot of these really solid companies, Alibaba, Tencent, JD, Meituan, so many of these companies that have truly created fantastic products and services, I think it is a very good opportunity to start scaling in. Is it at the point that, as you mentioned, right, like a lot of traders are momentum traders over here, and can these things correct another 20-30%? Mm-hmm. Highly possible. I, you know, don't have that crystal ball for the next month or 2 months, but I do feel that given the underlying market fundamentals, the underlying business fundamentals of these companies, there are some very good names out there that investors can start scaling into.
All right. Well said, Arun. All right. We're fresh out of time, even though I still have one more area I did want to chat with you about, Arun, but we're going to have to leave it here. He's Chief Strategy Officer at Flow, Arun Pai. Have a wonderful day ahead, Arun.
Thank you so much, Michelle. You too.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.